C2M. Number 5A.
We come to the next subject of principle, and here again we must see with what kind of qualities we should unite and conjoin in order to bring about higher humanity. The main tone epitome reads, spiritual unity in principle makes, now comes the tone of principle, through a scientific attitude, human relationships, that's truth, more harmonious and permanent. More permanent is life. So if you want to know how human relationships can stay on, how they can be made permanent so that they continue and don't break up at the next moment, then we have to base that human relationship on a scientific attitude. An attitude towards principle, if everyone is lined up to principle and unites with principle, then we have one common denominator which is fundamental for everyone, and all have the same principle, and that one principle is always one and not many principles, so that, those relationships based on principle can endure. And we know that that is not always very easy, that that does not happen all the time, that an unbroken friendship is a marvel in itself, and therefore it is not so easy always to be impersonal enough, to be principled enough on both sides or any partner that is involved in the relationship so that the harmony is maintained. The qualities that are brought out here in principle are foundation of a spiritual unity, that is our basis, that our foundation for spiritual unity is in science. She speaks for the first time about the genuine Christian scientist. A Christian scientist is actually one who adheres to the principle, and constantly she refers to science, that we must have a scientific attitude in contrast to the personal sense of things, the physical sense of things, and mostly it is the personal sense of things that has to be corrected. So this subject is very simple, very straightforward, saying, all right, if we have a spiritual unity with principle in everything we have to decide, in where we have to act, if that is our uniting one principle, then human relationships are permanent and harmonious. So we can ask ourselves now, wherein consists this scientific attitude? That's the question that you have in the epitome of principle. And we ask now, what is that scientific attitude? In mind, the answer is, well, in keeping moral obligations intact. So she begins again with the moral and legal obligations and says, let these laws be obeyed and keep intact. Then you act nearest right, then you act nearest the best humanity knows at this moment, namely to keep the laws, the moral obligations. How does she express this? It is just a paragraph that runs over the page. And again, the side note is permanent obligation. We hear again principle that brings something permanent, life. The nuptial vow should never be annulled so long as its moral obligations are kept intact. So she builds on the moral obligation or moral laws. Mind. But the frequency of divorce shows that the sacredness of this relationship is losing its influence and that fatal mistakes are undermining its foundations. Now we know today the more civilized the countries are, the greater the percentage of divorces. In the industrial Western country, it is about one-third of the marriages that are divorced. So something must be completely wrong about the moral obligations in a marriage. And so she says something is must be wrong. Actually, the laws of marriage must change. As we go on, we cannot rely on the old sense of the laws of marriage, and something new has to come about. And that is what we are witnessing in this transitionary period, that we have a completely different situation as we had 100 years ago. Think only of one thing, that 100 years ago, the average life of a man was 37 years. Today, it's more than the double. That means that we have to stick together in a marriage for the... Yes? You see, if 100 years ago you married when you were 20, 22, and the average lifespan was 37, you had to stick together 17 years or 15 years. Now, where everybody, the average life is 74, 75 years, you have to stick together 55 years. That's nearly three times as long. Well, in three times as long, everyone undergoes a development that is different. That's a very natural situation. That if you only have to mature, say, from the 20th year to the 37th year, during 17 years, and now you mature over more than 60 years, well, that's a difference. That's actually nearly four times as long. And therefore, people develop, people change, the whole world changes, the challenge of the world brings upon us completely different situations, and therefore, what was right 100 years ago may no more be right today. And therefore, there is a great question about that marriage relationship must change, and that there must be new concepts of marriage coming in, which naturally should be for the spiritual good and not just for a wild freedom. That's naturally the basis of it. But it is understandable that something new must come, because people develop differently in speed and direction. If you have, if you take anybody and you look at his life from 20 years on to 75 years on, then you see how much personality and individuality changes. So if you bind together two individuality into one, that's wrong. You have to leave those two individualities alone. You see, she says, what is her rendering? To divorce two individuality into one. That's divorce. The divorce starts right away with marriage, where two individualities are bound together and you take away the freedom of the partner and ask that the partner adapts itself to the other partner. And one of both is usually the stronger ones, and therefore the weaker ones has to adapt itself. You enslave the other partner, and that is not bringing mankind forward. So the divorce starts with marriage. There is the root of divorce. one can see what we have seen in Saul, and especially in Saul's life, how important that is to have that moral freedom where each individuality can unfold naturally, and that the other partner supports the other individuality in its or her freedom. And then marriage is not the divorce. Then marriage is just a union of qualities where one quality supports the other. So here in principle, naturally, we find out that the basis must be a principle. So what are the foundations? On line 31, separation never should take place, and it never would. It never should, it never would, under what conditions? If both husband and wife were genuine Christian scientists. And with genuine Christian scientists, we mean genuine, and not just Christian scientists. So there is divorce among Christian scientists just as natural as with other people, as long as they are not genuine Christian scientists, because genuine Christian scientists mean that every one of the partner is genuinely one with principle. Then they will stick together and do stick together, but otherwise they are under the same condition as anybody else. So science inevitably lifts one's being higher. Only science, not belief in science, not the statement, I'm a Christian scientist, I'm a member of the Christian Science Church. That doesn't make us a genuine Christian scientist. Genuine Christian scientist is if we are wedded to science, to the idea of science. Science inevitably lifts one's being higher. Can you see the tone of life in the scale of harmony and happiness? So science is that unity which lives higher. We come to the next subtone where we see that that scientific attitude consists in the good and pure welding indissolubly the links of affection. Again, we have in spirit always the pure and the good. Practically every time we come to the subtone of spirit, it is pure, keeping it pure, keeping what has been stated in the subtone of mind pure, apart from the opposite tendencies. Here again, we have kindred tastes, equal tastes. Motives and aspirations are necessary to the foundation of a happy and permanent companionship. Can you see? Kindred taste. Kindred means united with each other, the same as the other one. And that does what? Permanent relationship. Again, life and truth. So the basis of a permanent relationship are again kindred taste, motives and aspiration. The beautiful in character is also the good, now you come to spirit as good, welding indissolubly the links of affection. Indissolubly, can you say unites? That's a term of principle. It unites so that it cannot be put asunder, the links of affection. Just as with a mother's affection cannot be weaned from her child. And you see, not be weaned from her child, the union cannot be broken. There's a motherhood sense is always that which says that love is never without its manifestation and objectification. Cannot be weaned away. Because the mother love includes purity and constancy, both of which are immortal. So if that unity principle is good, is pure, then it is immortal, life. Therefore, maternal affection lives on under whatever difficulties. That's the beauty of motherhood. that the beauty of motherhood, that one can never wean away a child from the mother, that under all circumstances the mother remains a mother and mothers a child and keeps that unity with the child, no matter how difficult the circumstances are. From the logic of events, we learn that selfishness and impurity, again you get the counterfeit of purity is impurity, alone are fleeting, and that wisdom will ultimately put asunder what she has not joined together. You can see again, first we have the indissoluble link, now the very opposite. If impurity comes in, then that puts asunder what God has not joined together. Then no matter how much the human element comes in and tries to keep it up, it puts it asunder. You have a tone of principle as a counterfeit. We go to the next subtone of soul. We have here principle as soul. Namely that scientific attitude consists in the education of a higher nature which builds a barrier against vice. So that unity with principle is at the same time soul, namely that builds a barrier against vice. A barrier against vice at the tone of soul. Because soul is sinless and therefore builds a barrier against sin. Against falling away, against losing our standard. Here we read, marriage should improve the human species, improve life, human species, truth. Marriage should improve human species. How? Through what measures? Becoming a barrier against vice. A protection to woman, strength to men, and a center for their affection. So here you get the tone of soul, that it is a barrier against vice. This, however, is, in the majority of cases, is not its present tendency, and why? The reason is because the education of the higher nature is neglected. It's a great point. In principle, we always come to education, because principle teaches, principle explains, so that the teaching of principle reflects itself in education. And here it shows, because the education of the higher nature is neglected. That's why it's so important that in every country that there should be a good education, because only a good education can be the foundation for a higher society and a better civilization. The moment education is neglected, the country goes down. Because the education of the high nature is neglected and other considerations. Now you get all the counterfeit of soul, namely passion, frivolous amusement, personal adornment, display and pride occupy thought. So we have here the counterfeit of soul, which says that if that counterfeit of soul, like passion, amusement, adornment, and so on, reign and control us, that is the reason then for divorce. Or we come to the next subtone of principle, another quality is in demand, namely that scientific attitude consists in a scientific sense which alone can evaluate what harmony really is. The text read here, an ill-attuned ear calls discord harmony, not appreciating concord. So very often, actually, an ear that is not attuned to harmony cannot really experience harmony. It experiences as discord. So physical sense, not discerning the true happiness of being, places it on a false basis. Now here you have something that we have to consider over and over and over. We are here in the tone of principle, here especially in the tone of principle as principle, which would show us really what science does and what the scientific attitude is. And very often you will see in the textbook that the counterfeit of principle is expressed as physical sense. We always, in our usual study and having a list of ideas and its counterfeits, we always feel, well, physical sense, material sense, is the counterfeit of soul. And that's true. But when science is under discussion and the counterfeit of it once is being brought out, Mrs. Eddy uses very often as its counterfeit physical sense and physical sense testimony. Why? Why this apparent incongruency? This is very easy to explain. See, the point is that in natural science, in the other sciences, they always try to prove their findings through the testimony of the physical senses. If a proof cannot be reduced back to the point where we can see it, either see it directly with our eyes or indirectly see it on an instrument, on a finger in an instrument that shows something, then physical science says we have no proof. So for physical science, actually, the testimony of the physical senses must be given. That's why Mrs. Eddy called her great lecture Science versus Senses, not science versus, say, natural science or versus personal sense, but versus senses, because the senses are, for the natural scientist, the proof of a science. And so also here in the textbook we have to see that over and over, that the counterfeit that she brings up when she talks about science, that the counterfeit is the testimony of the physical senses. So to physical sense, not discerning the true happiness of being, places it on a false basis. Science will correct that. Now again, you can see that science will correct the physical sense. She doesn't say soul will correct it. Because in those cases, and actually only in those cases, where we have science under consideration as giving a proof, then it must correct the physical senses. Let's say we say, well, the sky touches the earth on the horizon. There they meet. That's what the testimony of the physical senses say. In order to disprove that, we don't need spiritual sense. For that we need science. We need the reasoning and the logic of science, that is just a false testimony. And we reason out things in science as, no, from the scientific standpoint, this is false. The sky does not touch the earth on the horizon. So you have science versus the testimony of the physical senses. These two are compared. Yes. So here we get it and see what we have as an epitome. In a scientific sense, which alone can evaluate what harmony really is. We cannot ask physical sense how harmonious a situation is, how harmonious a relationship is, It's only in science that we find the proof of it. Then we have a last tone, principle as life, that we find our scientific attitude in seeking in soul, not in personal sense, the unlimited source of happiness. It's an interesting point that we have to go back to the source and not to the phenomena in order to prove what discord is and what concord is. She says, soul has infinite resources with which to bless mankind. And happiness would be more readily attained and would be more secure in our keeping if sought in soul. Higher enjoyments, which is a question of soul, alone can satisfy the cravings of immortal men. We cannot circumscribe happiness within the limits of personal sense. Personal sense, that's a counterfeit of principle. We are in the tone of principle. The senses confer no real enjoyment. And you get the sense that only that which goes back to the source, that's the tone of soul, of life here, principle as life, but only going back to the source and see, is our source a synonymous term or not? Is our source mind or spirit or soul or principle or life and truth and love? Is that our source? Then we see that we build on a basis, on the fundamental, which is an unlimited basis for a relationship. So more and more, she shows how to go back to the synonymous term to find our true relationships that are permanent and not to rely on personal sense. And so she concludes that whole subject of principle. Just running through it, we can see what constitutes a scientific attitude in a relationship. What should we take into account for a relationship, for human relationship? As mind, he says, well, first of all, you have to keep your moral obligation. She starts quite down with the legal and moral. She doesn't talk about the legal, but it would include that. To keep our moral obligation would also be to keep the legal obligations. Then the attitude of spirit is that we have an attitude in the good and pure, which alone wells indissolubly the links of affection. Only then relationship is indissoluble. Then in soul, that it must be built on soul, so that is a barrier against falling back, against vice, against falling away from principle. In principle, as principle says, naturally, you must have a scientific sense. Science and not material sense testimony must really guide you. You can't rely on material sense to define if a relationship is right or wrong. And finally, as life, in seeking an unlimited source for your relationship and not a limited one. Yeah, that's principle.